At the third stroke, it will be...
Hello, beautiful people, and thank you for tuning in to the last edition of the EUC Digest Throwdown. My name is Ingmar Verheij, and today I'm joined by Eric, Jits, Johan, and Kees.
That took long, dude.
Why? Yeah. You suddenly couldn't remember?
It's a season finale, and still you don't...
It's a season finale. It's a special edition, because, yes, we are recording in person. For those who are watching, you can see it. We are in his south wing, so I'm sure he will tell about that a little bit more. But also, this is not just a throwdown. We'll also be looking at the events that happened in 2021, some of the episodes. But first, let us highlight our sponsor, who makes it possible to create yet another episode of EUC content.
Liquidware provides adaptive workspace management solutions for all Windows desktops. The company products encompass all facets of management to ensure the ultimate user experience across all workspaces, physical, virtual, DAS, or in the cloud.
Guys, it's good to be here again. Case, thank you for having us in your studio.
Well, it's not exactly my studio, but yes. You're more than welcome.
Thank you.
Except for Johan.
What happened?
Because?
Nothing, just because of his face.
Oh, just because of his face, all right.
Well, dude, what's this?
Well, and your ugly sweater.
Dude, what happened with all the love here?
As soon as the mic is turned on.
You took his chocolate.
Oh, dude, you're
you just gave away my chocolate.
He's just jealous as fuck.
Now we have to blur it out, and that has to be explicit.
I'll explain why later.
But, I mean, I think you got a great sweater, Eric, as well. Today is Ugly Sweater Day. So, guys, I'm kind of disappointed you didn't. I joined as well.
Looking at you guys, I thought it was Ugly Face Day.
That's Touché. Also true.
But there you go. Maybe this is a good opportunity to start. Or is there anything you guys wanted to say about...
Well. You mentioned, of course, our sponsor, Liquidware.
Yeah.
And since this is the season finale, I think Johan did a great effort on onboarding a new sponsor. And of course, next to Liquidware, we also have iGel as a sponsor during this past season. But Johan, you also found a new sponsor for us, right?
Yeah. Along the way, like in the last couple of months, I worked with Goliath Technologies, which is a US-based company, and they strongly focus on monitoring user experience, but also have some great solutions to do root cause analysis and other stuff. And they reached out to me if we were interested in onboarding them as a sponsor. So awesome. We have three really, really awesome sponsors for for the next season.
Yeah, so for upcoming year.
Much appreciated as well.
Yeah, absolutely. But so for the upcoming year, we have Liquidware as an exclusive sponsor. And both iGel and Goliath will share the season sponsor offering that we have as a EUC Digest podcast. So thanks to those three sponsors, of course, and that keeps us going as well, right, for the next year.
Absolutely.
Woo!
Well, thank you, guys. And I'm looking forward to another, episode of our new season with EUC Digest with you guys.
Really?
I enjoyed it a lot. Yeah, well, perhaps we should keep this for the end when look back and then some feedback, some candid feedback to you guys. And how about we start with the first topic of today?
Sounds like a plan.
All right. So recently, a rather significant remote code execution vulnerability named Log4Shell was found in a logging library of Apache. It's called Log4j. It causes a big threat to systems exposed to the internet. And while this was a component of Apache, which is an open source web server, we know that this library is used in a wide range of products and services. So how did this affect solutions in EUC and what is it that the listeners need to know? So first of all, if this is the first time you hear about this vulnerability, you're pretty damn late to the game and probably too late to mitigate. And someone already exploited the vulnerability, I'm pretty sure. And since this is a remote code execution vulnerability, this can have a significant ripple effect. I mean, it's just the exploit. After the exploit has been taken, after exploiting the vulnerability, bad actors can deploy botnets, install crypto miners, ransomware, backdoors, you name it. It's just the first start. So, be aware that just mitigating this is only a start. You need to look at other consequences. So what I did, I went to the various vendors, looked at what kind of information they shared on their websites. And what I saw is that, let me start with Citrix simply because that was dear to me. At the time of writing, it was yesterday, the Citrix Security Advisory for this vulnerability, it listed no products that were impacted, though some products were still under investigation, so keep visiting that page. And Citrix did provide guidance on reducing the threat vector with a responder policy in their ADC, and they've updated signatures in their web application firewall. So if you're using those products, that's going to help you mitigate and prevent that a bit. VMware also published a security solution advisory in which they list the products which were not affected and a list of products that were including certain releases of Horizon, vCenter, Workspace ONE Access, Identity Manager, Carbon Black, and some more. I recommend bookmarking that page if you use any of these products or products because you know most of them have a patch, but they're pending.
There's two really good GitHub repositories that will list all of the vendors by alphabetical order.
Ah, good. Yes. Do you know what that repository is?
No,
we're going to post it.
Right? Yeah, we'll post that as part of the show notes. But they're very useful because it lists them, and you can just go scroll through them on alphabetical order, which makes it a lot easier to digest.
Exactly. So I mean, I have a whole list furthermore, but let's post that GitHub repository. And again, if you are using one of those products, and I'm sure you'll have products which are probably affected, be aware. Start responding to that.
I never updated from version 1.0, so I'm not affected.
Well, one question which kind of like not bothers me, but I'm wondering, we're all nerds. We all have labs and probably, I don't know, networking stuff at home. Hmm. Did you guys patch your home equipment, like your Ubiquiti network stuff or...
I did, but I mean, there's always the question.
Who gave you the heads up?
Yeah. So yeah. Case came with the idea, like, don't forget to update your Ubiquiti. It was like, oh, yeah, damn it. And it was probably too late, as in it wasn't day one, it wasn't day two, it was like a week after. And I'm trying to reduce the amount of things which are, you know, public facing to the internet. I am using a Citrix ADC to front most of my things, which was updated, but, you know, fairly late probably. I think, as I say, like, at the carpenter, I don't know what the saying is. Raindrops? I don't know. There's a saying I only know.
There's all sorts of word vomit coming out of it.
It leaks in the plumber.
He's trying to translate
the
Dutch saying into English.
It leaks in the plumber. Something like that.
Yeah, it's also called Dinglish.
Dinglish.
Dutch English. Yeah.
So just to save you from further embarrassment, let me just help you out with the GitHub. It's the NC... SC-NL GitHub repository, which has all the log4shell mentions.
So one thing I did find interesting, I mean, it's good that we have, like, everyone published a security advisory, but why are there vendors not publishing things? Like, I could not find any guidance on from Nerdio, Workspot, and some others. I do realize these are SaaS vendors, mm-hmm. but why aren't they publishing this?
Well, what I've seen is that a few of these SaaS vendors are actually using web application firewalls to protect themselves against this vulnerability. So that's probably an easy way out in terms of preventing execution, and then you still have to patch it and fix it. But it at least kind of closes the door into executing on the vulnerability. Which I guess, you know, in most of these cases is an easy step to do. If you are already protected, then you know, you're basically done, right? You don't have to do anything else. Or maybe they're not using this specific module in the Apache web server.
Sure, but I mean, then why wouldn't you just publish an article and say, "Hey, we're not affected"? That's easily done, right? We're back for topic number two. We kind of were messing up audio, video, and stuff. So let's see how many topics we can cover today. So topic number two for today is AWS. At re:Invent, Amazon made Fleets available for AppStream desktop applications. Fleets have been around on AWS Elastic Compute Cloud or EC2 servers for years, and can now provide the ability to set the number and type of server instances that will be needed to supply these applications, so with AppStream, while sparing the customers the need to manually configure or manage virtual servers. So Elastic Fleets are designed for customers that want to stream applications to users without managing any capacity or creating AppStream images. Now, although the cost is a bit higher than with normal AppStream instances, Elastic Fleets can build per second for the duration of the streaming session. So since you can now scale the fleet down to zero when there's no usage, it can enable overall cost savings. Liquidware also announced support of their application layering solution, FlexiveOne, for the recently announced Amazon Elastic Fleets. Now, we did cover FlexiveOne in the previous episode. So we know that in contrast to the traditional Flex app, FlexiveOne wraps a whole application layer that contains one or more business applications into a single executable. And now the architecture exactly matched the requirement of the new AppStream 2.0 fleet type. But in contrast to the native AWS functionalities, it provides a simpler app and experience. So it kind of makes sense that if you are interested in like using Elastic Fleets with AWS, Liquidware might be a good solution. And what I really like about this Elastic Fleets is that it finally starts fulfilling those promises of cloud, or at least two, which is elasticity and pay-per-use, which is not the same thing we see in most DaaS or SaaS solutions. What are your thoughts on that?
I think you're absolutely right. So the fact that you can finally pay per second, and it's much like just-in-time desktops or just-in-time provisioning, I guess that's something that a lot of customers will or a lot of AppStream customers will benefit from.
Yeah, and I think there are quite a bunch of use cases, especially like in education when you do take exams or when you have like, I mean, it's not that COVID something was planned, but if you have to burst with your application usage and downscale quickly as well, that has been a use case that I had some conversations with customers, so which you simply could not answer with any traditional solutions. So I think it's clever.
Yeah. And definitely downscaling, right? I mean, how many people are being surprised at the end of the month because, oops, I kept something running?
Yeah.
So that definitely will help with bringing the cost down.
But how does that work exactly? Because I'm trying to understand this. FlexiveOne is just an executable that run on storage.
Yeah. So it's a combination, right? So it is Elastic Fleet from AWS AppStream combined with Liquidware's FlexiveOne. So they manage the application, the packaging and all that, and application management, whatever you need in that space. And then combined with AppStream, that does the delivery and Elastic Fleet does
the
scaling.
That's where the execution platform is.
Exactly.
AWS is offering the execution platform of that.
You need a platform to run it, right? I mean...
Yeah, but I tried to understand what was going on, where you actually... downscaling and upscaling and cost savings were at that point.
Yeah. So I think that's the thing, right? I mean, to your point, Yitz, I do hope it works, because whenever I hear someone speak about AWS, it's like, I got a bill at the end of the month. No one could explain where that came from. And it's kind of magic trying to understand why you're getting a bill from AWS.
It's more like black voodoo.
Yeah.
Oh, we have
not,
to talk
not
to
magic.
Johan.
He about voodoo. Yeah, I know voodoo.
I did not
something,
get that
something
one.
Graphics.
No. It was all about Linux, right? Linux VDIs.
I presented the session once.
His voodoo exercise.
Yeah.
All right. But
the whole voodoo was the whole NVIDIA stuff. So,
like, getting the drivers up and running.
It was Dockerson stuff.
Wait. Voodoo.
Honestly.
Voodoo was not NVIDIA, right? I mean, I don't really remember a video card named Voodoo like back in the days.
But... Oh, no. That was Monster, but Monster got acquired by Voodoo. By NVIDIA. Yeah.
All right. Well, we actually have another topic on AWS. Okay, you submitted one on outages.
Yeah. So the last few weeks, and I'm not sure if you guys noticed, but AWS had a few outages, and you're laughing already, right? So, you know, you saw some major vendors and websites being impacted. I think it was Disney was impacted, Hulu was impacted, and a few others. And to me, it it was one of these reflection moments where I sat back and looked at it, and maybe even in the lights of the previous point that you made, maybe cloud is not as matured as we all want it to be. And maybe we're designing applications and services in the wrong way, not optimal for these cloud delivery models, where if we put all of our eggs in one basket, we'll face problems like we've seen with the AWS outages. So I thought it was a very important point to make during this podcast because, you know, nobody wants to get an outage because their third-party supplier is having issues.
You know what really surprised me in this case? I agree, right? You're putting all your eggs
in this case,
basket.
Guys.
Yeah.
No pun intended, case. But what really surprised me that from AWS, you kind of expect that they have redundancy in so many places that this should not happen, right? I do remember whenever you start designing any DAS or any cloud infrastructure, it's multi-region. There's so many considerations for every cloud application that you deliver, especially at AWS. You could argue they're probably number one public cloud vendor. How the fuck could this happen? So
how do what?
How the duck did this happen?
It's going to be an explicit episode.
Yeah, that's fine. But I mean, it surprised me that it happens. I mean, then again, looking at you, Eric, at Microsoft, we've seen some outages as well.
Exactly.
Typically services, right? Azure AD or Office or like...
The one little thing with the certificate that brought down all of Azure?
Yeah, I mean...
No, but I think you're spot on with the maturity, right? I mean...
Or the dependency on that.
The dependency, well, that you as an organization,
just go ahead. Just...
No, but I think maybe I'm not sure. Well, we talked about the leaking sink, right? So I'm not sure whether this also relates to this topic. Definitely not the leaking sink. But if you... Today we all rely on electricity, right? And that our power net, at least in Europe, is pretty well. That's mature, right? It's stable, and at least I don't have any power outages around my place. But and the same when we started first, maybe with a power grid at the beginning, it wasn't maybe that mature, right? And then maybe the same applies, and a big maybe, right? With the big hyperscalers, they learn from these outages as well.
And isn't that the same with telephony and that kind of stuff? When you have this major television show, and you have this call center, or with your taxes, for instance, they scale up at that point in time.
I think
that has to mature as well, and maybe that is the same way.
I agree. Yeah. But I'd argue it is already pretty mature. However, everything breaks under pressure.
Yeah.
And the same goes for AWS or Microsoft or whatever. Electricity as well. Wait until Meta opens their new data center, and I'm sure all electricity will break as well.
Talking about that data center, where will they host that data center here in the Netherlands, Ingmar?
Yeah, it's a good question. I'm pretty sure that within a year or so, I'm going to have super fast Facebook access, Instagram, WhatsApp,
your backyard,
whatnot.
Man.
Yeah, they're going to build, they're probably going to build, Meta's going to build a data center in Zevolde.
Well, should we put a bet on that?
It's going to happen.
Do you think?
No, yeah, 100%. Wait. I'm a little bit. Okay, yes.
Yeah, you're indeed a little bit. But
yeah, no.
A little bit
of a question, right?
He's
maybe I'm a little bit screwed up. Okay, yes, I know the answer. No, but during this week, of course, it came to the 8 o'clock news, at least in the Netherlands, a couple of times. And also Meta or Facebook, they announced, like, we really want to do our best to lower the carbon emission on the planet, etc. If you really want to do that, don't build a fucking data center.
not at this scale. It's like ridiculous.
Shouldn't they like host their workloads on AWS?
Yeah. So about that,
the fun part in the whole outage was that I have three or four neighbors who are actually using their Ring doorbell, which I think it's kind of a decent big doorbell, but. Two of them, it didn't work anymore.
No, I've got a Ring as well. I've got an Echo Spot and an Echo Show upstairs. You know, it is what it is. But the when I say maturity, it's not just the hyperscaler by itself. It's also us as consumers of these services. We need to mature in the way that we
expect it to work.
Yeah, and the way that we design and architect applications on top of these hyperscaler solutions, because you know, you could put your eggs in one basket in one resource zone, or have multiple resource zones, or have multiple hyperscalers in multiple resource zones. And that's kind of the maturity level that I'm talking about.
Multi-cloud.
So you're looking at having both a Ring as well as a Nest Cam at the door?
If my wife would allow me to, yes. But that's just because I like gadgets.
No, but Ring should not only put their eggs in this single basket of AWS. They should have... Ring
is an AWS company,
yeah,
so
okay,
it's
yeah, yeah.
No,
but the example, if you would apply this to an organization, you shouldn't bet on just one hyperscaler. Maybe you should a multi-cloud hybrid approach, of course.
Dude.
Interesting topic you bring up there. There's a company out there.
Share on that?
There's a company that does that, exactly.
Well, I would argue that by now, at least the major vendors, Microsoft not, because they are the hyperscaler, but in a looking at UK, Nutanix does hypercloud, VMware does multi-cloud. Citrix does multi-cloud. So they offer you a choice between Microsoft, AWS, Google, maybe some other Alibaba. Is cloud. So, and
Oracle.
I think... Oracle cloud.
That's just Revelo, right?
and then some others have been. But I think the point in case is... point of case as well. You know, consider multi-cloud. Yeah. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. And again, I was surprised about AWS. So with AWS AppStream, same here. It's one basket, so that's a risk, even though you wouldn't expect it. So perhaps you will host some applications there, maybe not. Same goes for your desktops or other services. Well, it's what it is. All right, moving on to the next topic. NetApp. Again, I know them for filers. I think we spoke about them earlier as well in a previous show. Early in July, NetApp announced Spot.io, and that's a new DAS solution built on top of CloudJumper technology. NetApp acquired that in 2020. I see you frowning, Case. It was positioned as a simple, secure, and ready-to-use cloud desktop. Now, at AVD TechFest, NetApp showed a demo in which we saw that Spot PC essentially offers it's a management console. As a service, it unifies the management of Azure Virtual Desktop and Microsoft 365 Cloud PC. And then it orchestrates the management of a variety of Azure services like Azure Files, Security Center, Monitor, and even Endpoint Manager, and Microsoft Endpoint Manager, which are required to run Azure-based DAS at large scale. So this means that the value proposition of Spot PC is around management, simplification, and admin efficiency. Now, I think it's clever for one of NetApp to jump on the AVD bandwagon, as Microsoft typically delivers it's a good enough solution, which requires third parties to take full advantage of a Microsoft product. And I'm sure they'll include their Azure NetApp filer in the slipstream, so it will add some more revenue. But I was wondering, I saw you frowning, Case. Did anyone of you work with CloudJumper in the past or have seen it in action?
Well, I've seen it in action, and I wasn't exactly impressed. But it is what you just described. It's a simple, easy way to deploy a virtual desktop somewhere.
Yeah.
And the reason why I was frowning is because I just don't understand why a company like NetApp would actually be looking at a direction like this, because they're not traditionally big in EUC. I know that they support a lot of EUC workloads in terms of their storage areas. But overall, if you look at the product portfolio of NetApp, it's not an easy tie-in to end-user computing.
No.
So I'm just wondering how many, how you would set direction or course if you have the majority of your company looking at infrastructure components. Whereas DAS is much more a subscription-based solution that is based out of software. So I'm just wondering how the NetApp internals would look like when it comes down to offerings like this.
They also, I think that's over a year ago, right? Or even maybe longer. They also had these compute nodes where you can run your VDI workloads on the traditional...
SolidFire.
Yeah, but at least... Well, they're trying for quite some time now to expand their market share not only on the traditional infrastructure as you just mentioned, right? So it to me it makes kind of sense that they also now tap into this world. And the only big question is how successful will they be? And it will be kind of a big challenge for them for sure.
They also have this integration on analytics kind of site, and they created them themselves. Because I had a the private preview on Microsoft's Ades, and they showed me a lot of new stuff I didn't know NetApp did. Yeah. But these were all cloud-based.
Did they show you Dockers?
Dockers and stuff.
Yeah, but it makes sense, right, with analytics. I mean, if you, well, not control, but you...
You're right. They actually make management a lot easier of your cloud-based, and they do it for both the Microsoft cloud PC as well as AVD. But they also integrate some other third-party tooling in there, like another company also does Nerdio with Teradici. They also have a protocol in there to offload some of the 3D workloads.
That's part of HP Inc. these days, right? Teradici.
Yeah.
I mean, it really makes sense. I mean, if you want to deploy AVD properly, or even Cloud PC. I mean, we've discussed Cloud PC a couple of times. It's not bad, but there are bits and pieces missing, right? So that's why Nerdio is there. That's why it's easy to bolt onto AVD, because there are gaps. Spot PC, the same thing. There are gaps by Microsoft at this point. I'm sure Microsoft will fix them over time. This is why VMware and Citrix are still very successful when customers go to AVD, because there are gaps. AVD by itself, it could be viable for some organizations, but not for everyone.
Are there gaps? Or if you compare it to a bike, is it just like a bike with wheels without a seat? Without lights,
you would like,
and that, now right? you have to bike at night.
You would love a bike without a seat.
Really?
Why bring up that example?
Wrong podcast. No, so I mean, the way if this is the analogy, I think AVD is a bike, right? It takes you to the bar, it takes you back.
It's a bike with training wheels.
With training wheels, perhaps. Maybe it doesn't even have a light, so it's kind of risky to bring it to the bar and have some drinks. However, if you want to do proper downhilling, or if you want to actually do something more, if you want to bring your kid on the bike, you want to have a more decent, more robust, more safe, better tires, whatever, whatnot. It's a bike, right? It takes you from A to B, or perhaps it's a car, right?
I want to end up with a car.
It's a multiplot.
It's a multiplot, yeah.
See, that's the Dacia from the cars, right? It runs, takes from A to B, don't expect no. I mean, I don't want to downplay AVD here. I think it's a good solution. I think Azure...
You don't have to. We'll do it for you.
We'll take care of that. Fair enough.
Next topic?
Eric, you wanted to say something. No, please, you give us your opinion on the bike. Give your honest...
Share a sign.
Yes, I agree. There are gaps, and that's where all third parties really, really lean into and do a very good job. But not surprisingly, it's working really well for most companies, and for those don't, you come into play.
This is why the ecosystem of partners exists.
Yeah.
And I totally agree, 100%.
That maybe it's missing those pieces that you require to do whatever you want to do. But you can say it's a terrible product.
So you can.
It's terrible.
By itself.
So you can get a bike, but you have to get the seat from a third party. But
that's it. Yeah, that's it.
And then you're good to go.
You get a lousy seat. So you need to buy a good leather seat from a third party.
The thing is that I honestly think that Microsoft has the funding and the marketing machine behind it to actually make it work for a lot of customers. So even though it's a bike without a seat, they'll figure it out and see how you can bike without that seat or standing or whatever. Yeah, but Microsoft's marketing and funding makes that a lot of customers will accept a solution that is not 100%. Because if you get stuff for free...
I'm not sure if the seat is the right example, guys. No, I mean, let's say it doesn't have gears, or maybe it doesn't have proper lighting, it doesn't have disc brakes.
Let's step away from the analogy with bikes. But I think that it's hard to compete with stuff you get for free. So if Microsoft is funding a lot of
nothing is for free.
Hold on. So if Microsoft is funding a lot of these POCs with MDFs or whatever funding they have... It makes for a really tough decision for a customer to go to a commercial off-the-shelf product that you have to pay for. So that's where people come in that have a good understanding of both or multiple solutions and can compare them and kind of weigh in on the pros and cons of these solutions. But the thing that I see is that, with all due respect, Microsoft is actually throwing a lot of money at this to make it work. And that's one of the reasons why customers are still looking at this.
Debatable, that, though.
Let's personal opinion.
Debatable. If you have to throw money at it to make it work, then you could argue is the product well enough. But hey, let's not stand too still too long at AVD and enough. I think it's good that NetApp has Spot.io and that they're making...
Okay, that was
our... We were talking about NetApp here.
That's good.
Yeah. And I think with that covered, I think it's time to have a look at what happened in the year 2021, at least for Easy Digest.
Yeah.
Ooh. Like what events, what news, what podcasts stood out? And
can we get a drum roll?
Can you get it edited in?
Yeah.
Any better. This weird ass stuff that your guys are doing.
Molesting the table.
A drum roll for? Like,
Commando Beagle.
Let's take a break. I'll look at the camera. And we're back with another take of the throwdown. And we were just looking back at 2021. Yitz, you prepared a bit on past year.
Yeah, well, I did. And a season finale, of course, is, well, that's asking for us to take a step back and look at what we have achieved, of course, but also what we have achieved together with the sponsors we already addressed. So Liquidware and Igel of this season, 2021, thank you again for supporting us. And, of course, a very big thank you to all our listeners. Thanks to all our listeners, of course, we are able to do this, or at least this is where we that's the ultimate goal, right? Just for the listeners. Not just for us, although it's fun to do these recordings. But just a little bit on the statistics. So this year we released 24 podcasts, including 12 throwdowns. And I'm counting this one already in those 12, of course. So a monthly throwdown. Great initiative by you, Ingmar. So compliments to that. And we reached over 20K listens per episode. So that's also...
On average.
On average, yeah. So in total, that's 400,000 listeners, or listens, to be honest, over the entire year. And I'm not even counting this one and the last one. So
close to 500,000 listens to...
Exactly.
That's insane.
Over in 76 countries. So not just...
how many?
76.
Countries?
Countries, yeah.
How many countries exist?
200 something.
77. Okay, yeah. So there's still there's one to go, right?
There's room for growth.
I've been worried here.
I like the ambition.
No, I think especially this throwdown will help us get a lot of listens in those countries where they have bicycles. So China,
winner without
you're welcome. Yeah. Exactly. No, but of course it's also interesting. Of course it's good to celebrate what we have achieved, but also it's nice to reflect. So I'm also wondering from you guys what it is that stood out during this season. Maybe it's a podcast, maybe it's a throwdown, maybe it's some news that came along, some acquisitions or some people that changed in an organization. You're laughing.
Yeah, definitely. I believe I strongly changed the life of a lot of people by explaining the icon of Slack.
That was an highlight. This was my highlight as well.
Yeah,
I had this.
Yeah.
Totally
so
ruined it.
For anyone who didn't listen to that specific episode, if you look at the icon of Slack, so the communication application, and you look good, you see four ducks sniffing each other's asses.
I forgot about that. Thank you for bringing it back to my memory. So that was your highlight.
I was one of the highlights.
You're touching my day single life with this with this explanation.
Yeah. So that was definitely one of the highlights. And of course, for me personally, the release of my second book was a highlight. Yeah. And I believe that episode got a lot of listens. So. Absolutely. It may even be the...
It is.
The best
maybe,
listen.
It is. The podcast with the highest numbers of...
AWS plays. Went down.
Yeah.
It was so good. Yeah. Men, who were the hosts of that show? Do you remember, Case?
Yep.
Man, that was a good one.
They must have been really, really good.
Yeah, but in all fairness,
prepping for that one was kind of easy, right? Because you already... Well, you've covered the entire book, so...
I just reviewed a few of the pages.
Ah, okay.
And he just basically asked one question. So what's the book about? And that was me like explaining in 45 minutes what the book was about.
That was the podcast. Yeah,
yeah. No.
I mean, you were a great guest and it was a good conversation.
But that's what good hosts will do. Ask one question and that's it.
Yeah.
Step back. Yeah.
Facilitators. Somebody,
sorry to cut you short after 45 minutes. Yeah. Can you elaborate on chapter 2, please?
Yeah.
But you went up. So we're in the studio right now and I have my home office upstairs. You went upstairs. Did you notice that I've got your book in my backdrop? So whenever I'm on the camera, the book is has been shown.
Yeah. Yeah, it's awesome. And I found the last throwdown, the first one we recorded in person.
Yeah.
That was really
at
good.
The ITQ office was really awesome.
And in terms of other guests besides yourself, and
I recorded one with Ingmar, with Bob Janssen, who was located on Bonaire. That was really really great one. Well, first of all, because he joined Liquid, so we talked a bit about technology. But second of all, because we talked about his passion for agriculture and something completely different from IT, but he's still
diving as well.
And diving. So that was it was nice to talk about his passion. I also enjoyed the conversation we had with Brian Madden. And Brian he was a couple times was a guest in the throwdown as well. So he's last season I would say he's our listener, but no, he's one one of the listeners.
And for those listeners who want to catch up on those two episodes, so we're talking about season 2 episode 8 from EUC to farming with Bob Janssen, and then also episode 9, the impact of the digital workspace for human resources, I must say. That was the podcast with Brian Madden that you just mentioned, right? So for those people who want to catch up on those.
Yeah, if you want to put catch up on those, then definitely.
And some mayonnaise.
And Twinkies and stuff.
And Twinkies and stuff. Yeah.
That was Brian too.
No,
I agree. I mean, that conversation with Brian was fun. I think to me, one of the highlights was, again, recording with Bob, because he talked about his passion. And the same goes for the recording I did with Nano Auhand. I'm not sure. I did with you, Case, right?
It was you.
I mean, but Nano, I mean, obviously, he's a coworker and I know him for a long time, but he was more talking about his passion, his ambitions on just sailing the world with his wife and his kids, if they join, and his life goal on getting there. So it was what I sincerely like about EUC Digest, at least as a host or a co-host or even as a listener, is that we not just speak about technology. Sure, that's important. It's always related to EUC, it's related to IT, but it's about life. It's about everything that it connects. And I think Bob and Nana were good examples. I mean,
well, there's a difference between people talking about the solution or people talking about their passion. And we're recording this with cameras as well. The camera feeds don't end up obviously on YouTube, except for the throwdowns. But you can see a sparkle in someone's eyes when they talk about a passion.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
I could hear like the recording you had. I think Case with Ingmar together with the guy from you knew from the Nutanix community. I think
to Bry.
Yeah.
Dave.
You could hear like in the I texted you guys, both of you, that. His conversation brought me back to all the trips I made to South Africa, and I've been there like a gazillion times. But you could hear his passion about both technology as well as the country, and that's awesome to hear. It's awesome to like sit in a car or just listen to such an episode.
And I would say, I mean, speaking about passion, us sitting here, I mean, I know I initiated this last year doing the throwdowns. I'm just very happy that it works, that we all have a certain passion for topics, some more than others. Sometimes, I mean, what I sincerely like about the throwdowns, and absolutely in person, even better than virtual, but it's the passion. It's like, hey, I've got an opinion. I'm not afraid of expressing it. I know we're Dutch, so that's kind of our culture and our DNA.
I'm always afraid.
But, I mean, we like to share our opinions with the audience. I wouldn't say filtered, but with a message and with an understanding. So, guys, I want to thank you for contributing to the throwdown and being here
sometimes even submitting topics.
Well, it only takes like five reminders of you as a very aggressive reminders as well. So
yeah, I'm sorry, guys. Yesterday,
much appreciated.
Casey was referring to the three reminders I put in his calendar yesterday because he didn't submit anything just yet, but that's okay. And thank you, Johan.
I got mine done before the first reminder.
You were right. Johan, thank you for dragging me down the rabbit hole because now I have like three cameras set standing here, nothing works.
I brought like an Osmo Mobile, which is or Pocket, which is like mounted to a tripod, and it basically just does its work.
it's how these things go. So
it's all about the details. Now it's funny that
it's Kiss.
That everything or the majority that sticks to mind when it comes to the podcast is all about people who speak passionate about what they do. And that's also I have one podcast in mind with Chris Matthew, of course. So if someone is passionate about technology and is also very well, just a great guy to speak with on any topic, maybe. I really enjoy that one, and especially the honesty that he shows and the emotion that he shows with his different solutions that he built and actually that everything that he does, it's some sort of a continuous storyline at different organizations, building his ultimate dream. And that's what I
Skynet.
Really... Yeah.
Skynet.
Well, and Skynet basically transitioned into the Matrix. Yeah. So, I really liked... I like him as a person, as a human being, but I also really enjoyed making that podcast, that's for sure.
You know what I always get when I think about Chris or when I listen to him?
No.
I just start smiling.
Yeah, absolutely.
I just start smiling because I know when he talks, he smiles. When he's talking, he's passionate about things. And I just... It's contagious. I start smiling myself.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you start smiling because it's funny the way he says it, but also it's very relatable, right? Everything he says, like, I hear what you say, like, absolutely. Whether it's on stage or...
Did you have any highlights this year, guys?
I had multiple.
Thank you, Ingmar.
I had multiple, thank you.
Yeah.
Guys, so obviously all of the throwdowns were great, and I think Johan, you brought it up rightfully so, that the one that we did at ITQ was really good because it was in person, and I think we're all done and dusted with Zoom and Teams and everything that sits in between.
Everyone in this room spent a gazillion dollars on home setups and stuff.
And we're not done yet.
Yeah. And now we're recording in person again.
Well, and that's why it's working.
And nothing works.
Look at the face. I'm glad this is recorded.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Now it is. Yeah.
So for me, the things that stood out were the one that I did with Jits, with Michelle.
Netflix.
Netflix.
Yeah.
Because it was a very different setup as the things that we normally would do. What they're doing at Netflix, how they built their remote work solution was so different than what we typically see off-the-shelf products. It was very interesting to hear that, and I think Michelle did a great job in kind of walking us through her career path and talking a little bit about Netflix, but not too much. So I thought I really enjoyed that one myself.
Eric?
I don't have any highlights.
No. Next. No highlights. No, it was one big low light.
There was definitely the point on the icons was really learning.
Yeah.
Johan started this.
The four ducks.
Azure got a new icon all of the sudden. That kind of brought me to the whole idea. So aren't there any drawings in other logos as well? And I have one for you out of this podcast, which I definitely want to show you because it made me laugh all the time. Now I see it. But it's for outside of this podcast. But one with Chris Matthew, I liked, but I think that's the only podcast I did next to the Throwdown.
And together with Wingu, we did did a podcast, of course, the first one of the season.
Yeah. Last year was more or less me. Now it's more... as a group, and I like that a lot. What I really liked about the Bri thing
is I didn't know what it was.
Right. Oh, really? No. Oh.
You missed out.
I missed out. And
for real?
That weekend, I was at a barbecue workshop. Guess what there was?
Right.
Yeah. And it was awesome. And now I will never forget. But I learned it from our podcast, which was...
Now, the concept of the throwdown kind of changed because we started, like, the first throwdown we recorded, I think Yitz shipped all sorts of, like, boxes with wine, with or cheese. You did.
No, cheese. That was
Eric. Did.
That was Eric, yeah.
So we were all, like, drinking, and except for Case, because he was always sipping coffee. But
or water.
Like, but what was in that coffee?
Yeah, we don't know. Probably.
Well,
alcohol,
I still talk funny, so it wasn't that strong, or maybe it was. I don't know.
And today we drink water.
Yeah. So kind of the concept changed. Like, we started out with alcohol and with fun, and
now we just have fun.
And now, well, like I think it kind of changed along the way, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think we evolved, right? I mean,
we matured.
Yeah, yeah, no, I wouldn't go that far, but we were matured. But I mean, we've evolved. We started the concept. We were tweaking it over and over time. I mean, the drinking was fun, but at some point, you know, realize you still have a life.
No, but the point is, you want to reinstate the drinking, right?
Recording, I was like sweating peas because I was
drinking a bit too much.
Yeah. Because with water you sip when you're thirsty, but I do the same thing when I'm recording. I'm thirsty, but I'm drinking alcohol, and then it's easily get too much, especially if it's the end of the day and I haven't had much to eat.
Although I do have to admit, I did enjoy it a lot. I mean, also because you and I, we kind of had a wine review, review. But I kind of figured that we were the only one doing this, so maybe we should do our own podcast and just talk about it.
So I don't really want to spoil the surprise, but I do have something as a gift for all of us at the end of this throwdown.
Now,
so
now it brings that up.
Yeah. Four new cameras. That worked.
The ones that worked.
So yeah, no, I think it's I agree. I mean, we did evolve, we did change, we tweaked. I mean, whether that's an audio or video or setup, in the way we do the layout, like how we prepare our episodes and the content that we share. I mean, maybe leave it up to the listeners, like in the audience, like, what do you prefer, us drinking or not? I mean,
like, would you like
the wine reviews, the beer reviews, or should it come back or not? I mean, I actually got quite a bit of DMs on Twitter whenever I did a beer review. Like, hey, did you know about this? And I didn't know
Really?
Like about... Yeah. Also, the beer that I spilled and that I got for free as well. I mean...
Okay, so maybe we
at least once every 3 months, we have to do that just to fill our stash again.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, we can do that. Yeah.
So changing the podcast to a beer cast and then... just record another podcast.
And beers and...
Beers with engineers.
Beers with engineers. There you go.
It's born. Yeah. It'll probably exist already. Yes. But
To be fair, I mean, the throwdown, we can rename, right? I mean, we didn't say we can keep calling it the throwdown next year. To be honest.
The throw up.
Oh, man.
You have to have a beware song.
Yeah. So another topic. What do you guys thought of the clubhouse stuff we did?
I think, I think it was a fun experiment, but it didn't really work out the way we wanted to.
Yeah, I mean, I think Clubhouse, I mean, I'm not a Clubhouse expert. In case I'm looking at you, you're using it more frequent than I do. I think Clubhouse could work if you have a following and if you do very frequent, because then people can come get back to you. I think Clubhouse is difficult because people simply aren't ready, right? And not in the time that we record. So we did have our listeners, we had people chiming in, and I still think it's super fun and engaging if people join. And again, everyone is still welcome to join and, you know, give their opinions.
One of the hurdles of using Clubhouse is that in the beginning it was iOS only. So that's one. And I think that also for a semi-technical audience or a very technical audience, Clubhouse might not be the go-to platform to do live interaction.
Yeah.
So
no, I agree.
When I look at the people I engage with on Clubhouse, they're more the creative type,
right?
If you like,
So now that we, well, we look back at this year, of course, and also if we...
Did we finish looking back? It's quite interesting to see what Ingmar's favorite topics of or moments
I just shared.
Yeah. Oh, really?
No, we've got all the sessions in
line. Okay. Thank you.
I just want to bring one more in. The one that we did with Sumit for Remote 3.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no,
in the same context of passion, that guy showed passion and smiled throughout the podcast. Oh,
for sure. And also because...
That's also in Spot PC.
Okay.
They as well are one of those in that team. What I also enjoyed with the meeting with Sumit was I knew him earlier, right? When I did Demo Warrior Finals, that's when I met Sumit the first time. That's where I got introduced to storytelling properly, right? So that's where we had...
Pixar, right?
Yeah, Matthew Lund from Pixar. He gave a workshop and I had it again later. So Sumit was the one who essentially got me into that storytelling from Matthew Lund. So, and you know, it was again part of that...
Where did you lose it?
Moving on.
Going to EUC Digest.
And but on the topic of involving the audience, of course, we did a live, semi-live coverage at the Dutch Citrix User Group. It would be good, of course, to, again, to attend some in-person events. And there you can always involve the audience, of course. Oh, yeah. So that's definitely an option for next year. That's the only glance into the future that I have for 2022.
Let's just put it out here on the table. I mean, what's keeping us from hosting our own event next year? I mean, sure, there's a pandemic. There are some challenges here. I'm not sure you realize, Guy, but there's a pandemic which is making things hard. But, I mean, what's keeping us from organizing an EUC event where people can join?
We have the location already, right? I mean, there's still room at the table here in the South Wing. So
it's a good excuse
buying another space behind this. So
yeah,
there's probably nothing holding us back.
I mean,
but
it's not. And then, I mean, we can do a combination. I'm just thinking out loud, like combination of the podcast that we record as on stage, but also doing sessions. I mean,
but
and then,
we should like differentiate from the others. So
what others? Well, we're independent. Like, we have an opinion. We're not
sure, but there are a lot of okay. So when everything opens up again and in person events will start emerging, they're, I won't say all the same, but they're all kind of decent. Let's call it like that, kind of.
Okay, so you want to rent a bar every Friday, last Friday of the month, and invite everyone for beers and drinks? And
let me rephrase
by coincidence, Mike as well?
No, dude. So in the last throwdown, Ingmar just and you got back from E2 EVC.
Yep.
I strongly believe that there's a middle ground between the traditional conferences and E2 EVC.
Yeah.
And I think we should like find that middle ground.
Well. On the topic, initially, we founded the EUC Digest Foundation to develop three concepts, which the podcast was one of them, and organizing events, EUC-related events, was also one of them. So, it's still...
Perhaps what we can do is ask to the audience, their audience, if the EUC Digest should host an event. Should we? For one, that's a question. Then two, what is it that you want that us to do? What should be different from a vendor conference? What should be different from like an E3? What is it that you're missing or that you'd like to see in a conference that we can bring to the table?
So a braai and
a braai, beers, wine.
Braai definitely is going to be there.
Oh, dude, you know what we should
microphones.
Do? I've been to a couple of developer conferences, and one of the things that I experienced at I think it was Cloud Foundry Summit for the first time was something they call slide suicide. And it's basically, so I'm on stage and I get to present a deck, but I never saw the deck before.
Awesome.
So for instance, Ingmar creates like 10 slides and I have to present those 10 slides, but then I don't know what to present. So I'm just hopping in slides and it really helps like your storytelling stuff and, you know, think on your feet and try to like...
So can you see one slide in advance? Do you present a few?
No, you don't know what you're
going to...
Another one could be that I have like 60 slides and I give my clicker to someone in the audience. And as soon as they get bored, it just hop on to the next slide.
I definitely see opportunities here. I mean, I think you have to be the one that delivers that session.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, why not?
Sure. Yeah, I like the concept.
So for the people who want to practice this, the storytelling thing,
yeah.
There's a box of dices that you can buy on Amazon, which are called Rory's Story Cubes. And that's what we use for our kids when we have to do the bedtime stories. We never read out of a book. We use the dices.
I got similar ones.
And those are great to evolve. Yeah, but
those are not for your kids.
No, they're definitely not for my kids.
I'm very, you know, this is an innocent suggestion.
This is a safe space, okay?
But yeah, but that
oh, now I get it.
Do we have a safe word as well?
Yeah.
It's called seat.
But that's a great way of evolving storytelling as well, because it's a similar concept, right?
Yeah,
you
just throw the dices and you just make up the story.
So what if we have a dice, something like a dice, maybe digital dice, and then every 5 minutes we just flip it, and then someone else has to go on stage. Like, I'm sorry, Case, you're now up because you rerolled you and then tell a story.
So basically, the audience is sitting at home with a remote and just changing the channels each and every time. that's kind of the concept.
You've got 120 channels in this room.
But we want them to binge watch.
So, I think we have enough ideas, but I think this will work.
And this is great. Even without alcohol, right?
So can you
imagine?
Yeah. As we're drinking
next year is going to be great.
Yeah. Okay. Was there anything else you wanted to cover for, you know, a look back of 2021? Or is this the moment where we say...
Is this the moment?
No, I think this is the moment where we also take a quick peek into the next year, of course. So we already have 7 guests lined up for next year. So we'll be recording those one
pretty soon.
We're pretty done already.
Any names you want to like spoil already?
No, no names.
No names. No names. Just roles or...
Nope.
Roles?
Roles.
Roles.
Activities, VPs. Yeah. Any returning guests?
Retarded guests.
Retarded guests. Well, yeah. No. Returning, dude.
We had those already, so.
Any one of you look forward to?
Maybe that could be a thing in our throwdown. The retarded guest.
Well, I do look forward to one guest, and maybe it becomes a little bit boring again. That's because of passion, but also because of the person itself. So this is a guy that works out of Cologne, built his own company on a good, steady, decent pace. And his entire philosophy at building this company, and even his entire philosophy to how to deal with people in general, that's something that I really really appreciate. So I look forward to that one, but I'm not gonna
spoil the beans. Yeah. I mean,
I guessed it by your description.
It's not a very large city, but
No, he's also an organizer of a small community event.
Yeah.
All right, that's enough hints.
Yeah.
Yeah, otherwise we were just going too fast.
Yeah. Let me limit you there.
Okay, thank you.
Right.
Oh, you guys are horrible.
Yeah.
I mean, guys, I almost need to go. My Uber is almost over.
Yeah.
I think you should wrap it up.
And with that, I think it's time to wrap up. Not just this episode, but the entire season of the EEC Digest Throwdown. So again, listeners, thank you for sticking with us until the very, very last episode and the end of this episode. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your continuous support. You know, we made 12 episodes in the season of the Throwdown. We had a lot of fun. We've learned a lot. We tweaked the format here and there. We'll still keep doing that. We've had some great feedback and interactions in the Clubhouse voice room. And last but definitely not least, we were recognized by Forbes as a favorite industry-focused podcast. And I think it was a great accomplishment, a great acknowledgement of what we've done. So for now, I want to thank you for listening. Wish you well. And we'll meet again in the next season of the EEC Digest.